You're listening to The Dream Show with Jane Theresa Anderson.
Welcome to The Dream Show. I'm Jane Theresa Anderson, and this is episode 65. And I have a number of different exciting things lined up for you to listen to today. Some serious, some more lighthearted. And whichever they are, they're all designed to help you learn more about dreams, your dreams, and how to interpret them. Now, going backwards, at the end of the show, I'm going to be answering Jeremy's question. Jeremy is one of our listeners, and he's written in a question asking me about the significance of animals in our dreams. So at the end of the show, I'm going to be addressing Jeremy's question and helping you all to understand a little bit more about why animals sometimes appear in our dreams, how to interpret them, and how to work with them to find out interesting and insightful things about yourselves. So that's at the end of the show. But at the beginning, what we've done, and I say we because I'm about to introduce my husband, Michael, into the mix, but not just yet. What we've done is select a couple of articles that have recently appeared in the Australian press about dreams. They're articles reporting recent research results on dreams. And we've had a little look through them, mostly because I've had a bit of contact this last couple of weeks from the media wanting my opinions on them, but we've had a little look through, and Michael's going to ask me some questions about those research results and canvas my opinion. So it's an opportunity to share some of those results and my thoughts about them with you today. But before going there, I'm going to introduce you a little bit to Michael. Now, many of you, of course, have heard me talk about Michael. He's my husband. And you've heard me mention the fact that Michael is the clever IT man behind these podcasts. He does the recording, the quality control. And if you've been a guest on the show, you'll have had a quick chat with Michael before coming on, as he's talked to you about what to expect while we're doing the recording. Now, Michael is actually a lot more than that in his real role in life. His real professional role is he's a ghostwriter, which is very exciting because it means that he writes a lot of really good books for other people who don't have the time to write their own books. So he has a kind of quiet life. Ghostwriters kind of sit quietly in the corner. So it's quite a thing for Michael to come to the microphone today. So welcome to the show, Michael.
Hello, everybody. How are you tonight? Is that the right way of saying it?
Oh, that's beautiful. And, you know, between you and me, the audience, I'm not talking to Michael now. I'm going to, we usually do these shows in a one take. So when Michael's asked me some questions from these newspaper articles, I'm going to throw him in and ask him a few questions about dreams that he might have had, or, you know, how dreaming and how being married to me as a dream interpreter has thrown light and
understanding. This can work two ways, Jane Theresa Anderson. This can definitely work two ways. Do you know what? One of the most common questions that I get asked is, what is it like being married to a dream interpreter or dream analyst?
And what do you answer?
Well, they're perfectly well aware that, when I wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning with a really, really interesting dream, I just give you a quick nudge and you get out your clipboard and start analyzing it for me. Isn't that right, Jane?
Well, it was in the early years.
Exactly. You didn't put up with that for too long, did you?
And then I trained Michael in the gentle art of being able to remember your own dreams. And gradually, as years have gone by, the even more gentle arts of being able to interpret your own dreams and create your own alchemy, at which he is now a master. But we'll prod him a little bit deeper on that after the more serious aside. So, Michael, which article have you got there, and what are you going to ask
me?
Well,
I've got Michael Lund's article here from the Courier Mail, which was right at the end of last month, right at the end of June there. Should we swing into that one, Jane, do you reckon?
Yeah.
It's got some really interesting stuff here. I'll start off with one question that's probably really interesting for everybody, and that is based on the fact that researchers now say that bad dreams can have a dramatic effect on health and are associated with insomnia, fatigue, depression, and anxiety, which is, that's a fair bundle. What do you say?
Well, there's a kind of chicken and egg effect, isn't there? I mean,
which came first?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you're having nightmares and you don't understand what they mean and you don't realise that nightmares can actually be quite helpful once you interpret them and understand them, the last thing you want to do is go to sleep the next night and have more of the same. So, you know, you worry about them during the day. What do these bad dreams say about me as a person? Am I going to be carted off to the nearest psychiatric institute if I tell people about these nightmares or bad dreams? What are they saying about me? And people, of course, worry themselves through the day if they don't understand their nightmares. And then they get into bed and they don't really want to go to sleep because they don't really want to go through those terrifying nightmares again. And the end result, of course, is not only insomnia, but you get tireder and tireder and more exhausted as the days go by. And when you get tired and exhausted, you get sick. You're not very well. You suffer badly. And without the, you know, necessary restorative value of sleep, sleep isn't only about dreams and dreaming. Sleep is also about the phases between the dreaming phases where your body actually goes into deep healing. And so if you're not sleeping well, you're missing all those opportunities to put your brain and body back where they need to be. So it's no surprise, really, that you get insomnia, fatigue, depression and anxiety when you have nightmares. And of course, it's also no surprise that you have bad dreams when you're suffering those things anyway, because your dreams are trying to address the very fears and anxieties that are plaguing you during the day.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Can you possibly just sort of elaborate a bit? Depression, how does that come about with bad dreams? How does depression manifest?
Well, again, there's a number of things that are happening there. And one is that if you don't have your proper restorative sleep with or without the dreams, the basic brain biochemistry gets completely unbalanced. And that's where depression can come in as well.
I understand.
Know. But it can also work the other way around. If you suffer depression, and, you know, we all suffer minor depression from time to time. And then, of course, some people have, you know, really deep and serious depression. But, you know, there's a strong argument for the more general depression that many of us get from time to time, centering around feelings of losing connectedness with life, perhaps losing a sense of meaning and purpose and direction in your life, feeling there's a hole in your life, feeling flat, feeling, you know, what's the point, what's the bother? And, you know, these result in dreams that try to address those things and can be pretty frightening for us. And those are the valuable dreams to go into to find out what is happening in your wonderful mind that is stopping you from finding that sense of meaning and purpose and direction?
Gotcha. Well, let's swing over to China here, because they've been doing a lot of research. They've been doing a lot of research over a lot of years. But just recently, they've discovered that 1 in 20 people suffer from frequent or chronic nightmares. That's a new study. 1 in 20, Jane.
Yeah, I wonder if that was just in China. You know, I wonder if you do the same survey for people in different countries, whether you get different results from that. I have a feeling that was just in China, but it's probably pretty general. 1 in 20 people suffer from frequent or chronic nightmares. And I think at some stage that was defined as at least one nightmare a week, I think.
Well, there's actually more. We'll have a look at that. A bunch of psychiatrists there investigating nightmares in 9,000 adults, looking at the frequency, were obviously looking also whether they had any links with ill health. And the results showed that 5.1% of people have frequent nightmares defined as at least one a week. One a week. They were more common among women, with 6.2% having at least one a week, compared with 3.8% of men.
All right.
So what do you reckon to that?
Well, one a week. Remember, we're talking dream recall, not actual dreams here. we all have four or five dreams a night, which in a week is 7 5s are A lot.
35.
And even the best recallers amongst us don't remember them all.
Some people don't remember anything.
And think
as a result of that they don't actually dream what dreaming.
That's so right. Yeah. So it's really, you know, in any survey like this or any survey on dreams, what we're really doing is surveying the dreams people remember, not necessarily all the other dreams that they're having. And yeah, nightmares and bad dreams tend to wake us up, and maybe we remember those more than all the lovely, gentle, or even boring dreams that we have. So those figures might be, you know, slightly, if you look at all the dreams you have, we probably don't have as many nightmares as we are really giving the impression we have here. But for one in five people to have at least one nightmare a week is quite a high number.
Mm.
And I guess it's a reflection of not only the kind of anxieties that we are dealing with in life today, but probably more specifically reflecting the fact that not many people these days are that interested in interpreting and understanding their dreams. Because if you do have nightmares and bad dreams and you start looking at them and interpreting them and understanding them and applying the insights you get about yourself from those interpretations, guess what? You don't have as many nightmares and bad dreams.
Well, that would suit a lot of people, a lot of people that you deal with, I know. How about this, Jane? Researchers, and we're out of China now, we're back in the rest of the world. It's a generalization, I think. Researchers have found that the frequency of nightmares can be linked to income.
In which way?
Well, those on the lowest incomes were 2.3 times more likely to have three or more nightmares a week compared with the more wealthy.
Well, I guess there's no prizes for what probably everybody listening in is thinking at the moment.
But at least it's been proven.
Okay,
those debts can give you nightmares.
That's right, yeah. So, I mean, I guess it depends how low the income we're talking about there when it just says those on the lowest incomes. But, yeah, lowest incomes these days are pretty abominably low. And if you're trying to survive, which is what a low income can often mean, just trying to survive, you're really kicking into survival instincts areas there. Your dreams are going to be wildly trying to understand what's happening in your life. And I'd say probably you'd be having a lot of animal type dreams. Funnily enough, we're going to address that later today, since animals tend to represent instincts. But yeah, definitely nightmares and bad dreams reflecting the difficulties, anxieties, worries and stresses that are happening when you've got a low income. I would imagine there's, you know, some of the very, 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 very top wealthiest people probably have some very bad nightmares as well, because you know, it's a bit of a problem what to do with all that money.
Oh, yes. Yes, I'd worry. I'd really, really worry.
Let's just take a little reality check here and just remember, I'm sure most of you know this, but, you know, what dreams do is they process your experiences, your conscious and unconscious experiences of the last 24 to 48 hours. And what your dreaming brain is doing is filing that all away, trying to make sense of your world, trying to make sense of how you see your world and how you understand it and your place in it. So if you're going through a lot of stress with a low income, with trying to put a roof over your head, with trying to put food on the table and all the things associated with that, those are the experiences, those conscious experiences, and also the unconscious accompanying experiences, memories, traumas that go with all that stuff are what your dreams are processing every night while you're struggling through a low income phase in your life.
Hmm. Well, let's hop over to Germany, because that the Central Institute of Mental Health Sleep Laboratory in Mannheim, they've been looking at highlighting a link between nightmares and health. And Dr. Michael Schredl there says the high correlation between nightmare frequency and sleep-related daytime consequences underlines the fact that nightmares might have a strong effect on the well-being of the patient and should be treated. So how do we go about that? If I don't know.
How do you go about treating patients with that are suffering from nightmares and the sleep-related daytime consequences? I love the fact that medicine is finally really catching up with this You know, that people that are having nightmares do need some kind of treatment because there is a carryover effect, even if people are just seeing it as sleep disorder, insomnia. And I guess what concerns me about this kind of quote is that, you know, mostly scientists and sleep scientists and people are really still looking at, well, let's look at how we can treat patients to overcome insomnia, to have a full length sleep, to overcome depression and anxiety, the results of not sleeping well, the results of having nightmares, and perhaps not looking at the, what to me as a dream analyst is obvious, is, well, how about we interpret the nightmares and then find out why the person is having the nightmares? You know, I guess to me, the treatment ideally would include professional interpretation of the nightmares and getting the sufferers to apply dream alchemy techniques, you know, specific to their dreams and their situations, to address the issues the nightmares reflect. And the result of that is that the person's issues are addressed, the nightmares stop, the people begin to sleep properly again, and health and well-being return. So, you know, what I'd be looking at is deep treatment. Instead of treating the symptoms and the sleep, listeners, treat the dreams. What are these dreams reflecting about the person? What insight can the dreamer get about the nightmares and why they're having them? Then they can address that through understanding their dreams, doing the alchemy, stop the nightmares, wonderful, back to full health.
Well, you've seen plenty of great results as a result of applying those principles. So, you know, and so have I. So you're not preaching to the converted.
And it's just struck me as you're saying that you know, I was saying earlier that you're a ghostwriter and, you know, you've written books for people and their names appear on the cover as they should because it's their stuff. You've just contributed the bit about putting it into words for them. And you sit very quietly. And to some extent, I've just realized that although I do a lot of loud public stuff like radio and television, podcasts and webs and blogs and things, when it comes to me working individually with people, you know, privately, particularly with very, very, very issues that they regard as very sensitive and personal and confidential, and I'm, you know, working with them with their dreams and their nightmares and then helping them to understand why they have the nightmares, and then, you know, the people go and do alchemy and they have changes in their lives. Because it's also private and they feel, you know, it's their private stuff, they don't really often get up and shout about, oh, I had this wonderful interpretation of my dream and it showed this about me and I did the alchemy and all these wonderful changes in my life. That's pretty rare. I mean, we have a number of podcast guests that come back and, because they've been so beautifully generous with having their dreams interpreted on this show, come back and give us the update and say how life has changed. But, you know, so many people I speak to just quietly go away with changed lives. And I think that that's absolutely wonderful. But I don't get to tell this story. It's just like you don't get to jump up and say, when you see a book doing really well, you don't get to jump up and say, I had a hand in that.
Well, you don't often see a ghostwriter at a book launch, do you? And when you're at a book...
How would you know?
Well, you can't introduce yourself as a ghostwriter too easily. No, we do go to book launches and of our clients, and it's a wonderful thing. No, but...
Well, look, just getting back to dreams, Michael, I've kind of said that I'd set you up with this, and I'm not going to get you to really necessarily talk about any particular dreams you've had, but we've been together for quite a long time now. I can't remember how long, but anyway,
9 years.
Nine years.
Yes. time off for good behavior. Sorry.
And when I first met you, you were a complete and utter cynic about dreams. Well, you were a cynic about a lot.
I was the ultimate cynic.
Dreams.
I was the ultimate cynic when you first told me what you did. You know, it was very hard for me not to, well, I had great difficulty in stopping my eyes from rolling back into my head, but I, you know, you're a very attractive lady, so I thought I better hang in there. But it certainly didn't take me long to be converted. I mean, dream analysis is a great deal of science and in a way, the astute application of common sense and intuition. and seeing that in operation, well, and it worked for me. I mean, I suppose I'm going to have to be a little bit out here now.
Oh, thank you. That's really lovely.
Oh, great. Yeah. Where's my IT console? I should be hiding behind that.
No, where's your IT console? You should be pulling out one of those claps, you know, the audience claps here.
All right. So I guess the thing that's affected me mostly about dreams and my own dreams is that the way that dream analysis or dream interpretation has highlighted so many things in the unconscious, and particularly unconscious fears. I'll give you an example.
Oh, good.
Yes. I suppose I get charged for this. Oh, I probably have been. I had no idea that early days that I had such a strong reaction to criticism. I thought my reaction to criticism was perfectly normal. You know, I'd take umbrage, and that was normal. But of course, and I would be very upset, and I thought that was normal. In fact, I was actually bitter. On a number of occasions, I got murderous. No, I'm getting a little bit. This is the ghostwriter coming out. But no, I was seriously affected by criticism. It really hampered my potential and my development as a writer, because writers need criticism. I mean, if you work with an editor, your writing is quite often shredded, and for good reasons. We can't write and then write creatively and then really edit ourselves particularly well. So, now I feel perfectly at ease with criticism on any level except my driving. I mean, no, did I say that? I better have some more analysis, Jane.
Without necessarily being specific, what kind of things was it in your dreams that gave you the clues that that you were critical? Or didn't like accepting criticism? Was it specific symbols like other people or feelings in your dreams? Or
I think it was more the emotions, the emotional reaction to things I'm starting to feel really nailed to the wall here.
Well, I'll help you out, because I do remember some of the earlier dreams.
Thank you.
Without really opening things up for you. But, I think, and for me, because this is all about me at this moment now, I'm just switching the microphones. When I first started really, getting into dream research and understanding it, and, I starting to obviously analyze my own dreams, I found for me that one of the most powerful things that I learned was the importance of what other people in your dreams symbolize, and meeting other people in your dreams and then saying, oh, what is this person? What three words would I use to describe this person's personality in my dream? Oh, they're flexible, they're this, they're that. And then suddenly realizing, flexible, this dream is about my own flexibility issues or whatever. And I seem to remember, so that kind of has blown me away in all the dream research, the absolutely wonderful way in which people come into our dreams, or we conjure up people in our dreams that just seem to represent issues that we're dealing with ourselves. And I seem to remember in the early days with you, a lot of your dreams were peopled by people who were quite, critical, or didn't like accepting criticism, the two extremes.
They weren't very nice people in my dreams, were they?
They weren't nice at all, were they?
No.
And then gradually you began to realise quite a lot of things.
Yes. Yeah, and I guess that's one of the things about dreams that it takes an objective analysis, isn't it, to see that the people in the dreams aren't who they seem to represent. They're not your uncle, your aunt, or your workmate. They're actually representing those very strong characteristics or personality traits about yourself. It's all about you.
It is. And to some extent, that's one of the hardest areas of dream interpretation, not only as a dream analyst, but for people to understand themselves, that the people in the dreams are not who they appear to be, but that they represent something about your own either conscious beliefs about yourself or your own unconscious beliefs. So they really highlight those issues. And I think when people find that difficult to understand, that's where the value can come into having a consultation to really talk through that stuff. And because you asked me about a number of those in the middle of the night, you got your own little consultations before you were firmly shown how to interpret your own dreams and work with them.
Just as well, because, you know, spending a whole hour in analysis in nighttime was keeping us, you know, it was getting, I mean, the cups of tea were nice, but anyway, look, let's move on to the Daily Telegraph of the 15th of July.
Oh, I didn't know we had more. Good.
Yes, we got a few more. Is that okay?
Yes, that's fine.
Any more time, madam? Well, yes. Okay.
The Daily Telegraph.
15th of July. Yeah, 2010. That's now. Mm. This month. Professor Drew Dawson from the Centre for Sleep Research at the University of South Australia. He said the day before, dreaming could be a vital mental tool for sorting and filing information and discarding what's not needed.
I'm laughing because I love the fact that after all these years of my research, you know, 18, 19 years of my research, when I've been saying, you know, what the dreaming brain really does is kind of, it's like a filing system. It's going over the last 24 to 48 hours of your conscious and unconscious experiences and it's filing them away and comparing them to the past and, you know, throwing out what's not needed and keeping what is. And then suddenly the Daily Telegraph quotes someone saying, you know, this is what we think dreams are doing these days. Oh. I go, yes, I know. I've been writing about that and talking about that for a long, long time.
Well, you've said exactly what he said. One theory, well, it must be yours, is that it's a way of allowing your brain to recover and consolidate all the memories and activities of the previous day, like filing time. Yeah. Sounds like a bit of a defrag to me.
It is a bit of a defrag, and I would take issue with the previous day. I've noticed time and time again through working with people with their dreams that often I can see elements of 24 to 48 hours in their dreams. I'm not quite sure why, but it happens so solidly that, you know, it's there. When I interpret someone's dream, I'm always looking over that time frame of what's been happening for them in their lives. And I guess, you know, maybe sometimes it's just so much happens that it takes more than one night to process it. So I'd say 24 to 48 hours. It's interesting because a lot of the, obviously when you hear me, as you do on these podcast shows, sometimes interpret dreams for people or with people, the interpretations that come out are, you know, deeply meaningful along the lines of looking at their unconscious beliefs, their emotions, their fears, their personal development, their spiritual path, all kinds of levels there. And yet that seems so scientific, you know, that quote of, file away the experiences, discard what's not needed. And people can be quite surprised when I say, yes, that's right. That's what's happening. I go, what? You mean dreams are just a kind of way of deciding what memories to keep and what to trash? Yes, that's what I'm saying. And people think that's not what you seem to be doing, but it is. Because where I then come in is to say, now, think of this. We all go to bed at night. Our dreaming brains, whether or not we remember the dreams, are busy filing away the last 24 to 48 hours of our conscious and unconscious experiences, filing them away mostly with reference to the past, which is why things from our past appear in our dreams, and sometimes filing them away and thinking, oh, I've got a new idea. We could look at life in a new way, and that, you know, you wake in the morning with new ideas or you decide to do things in a different way. And that's, you know, that's your future. So we're all busily doing this basically every night, updating our personal view of the world and our place in it. And that's where the magic is. Yes, it's scientific. Yes, we're going far, far, far. Chuck at that. We don't need to remember that anymore. Ooh, far that over there. But what you can do when you interpret a dream is say, aha. Now, I can see how your unique mind is working because, Michael, I can look at your dreams and I can see that your dreaming brain is filing this experience with that one when you were three. Oh, why would it do that? Now, that's interesting.
Because I was a little shit when I was three.
Well, maybe, yeah. And I can look at Mary's dreams and say, now, Mary, you were there with Michael yesterday and you had a similar experience, but look, look, your dream, and when I interpret your dream, I can see that you're filing that experience with, oh, with something that happened when you were 15. Now, why would that be? So what we're doing when we interpret a dream is look at your unique mind, how it works, how it files things away. Why does it file things here, there, and everywhere? What does it discard? What does it hang on to? Because all of that tells you what your unconscious beliefs are, what your emotions, feelings, fears are that you prefer not to look at, that you've got in your unconscious mind, because that all affects how you do this filing. So in interpreting a dream, you get to see how your unique mindset works. And in knowing that, you can then say, right, so when you wake up in the morning and you think, because you've had a good dream, that you've got a handle on what this life is all about, maybe you haven't. You've just got a handle on how your dreaming brain thinks, what your dreaming brain thinks life is about. But let's look. Do you realize in that dream you've got an unconscious belief that da-da-da-da-da? And that is why every time you look at your life, you're maybe acting in ways that aren't really working well for you, because you're acting according to unconscious beliefs that you've got. And would you like to change those and have a better result? So the magic is really in the work that I do, and when I train you to be able to do this for yourself, or train other people to be analysts and do this as well, the magic is in being able to notice through dream interpretation the unique mindset of a person, draw that to their attention, and then give them techniques to change that unconscious mindset so that they not only see life differently, but because they see life differently, they respond to it differently, and therefore life turns out differently. I didn't know that was going to be such a long answer to a short question. I talk rather a lot sometimes, don't I?
Can I have that in writing? Here we go. Now, that's great. I mean, I bet there's some really horrible slavering monsters out there that could do with filing away. But they should be dealt with, shouldn't they, those monsters in our dreams?
Those dreams, exactly, yeah.
This is really interesting. Professor Dawson said that your brain waves while you're dreaming actually look very similar to your brain waves when you're awake. And this has led some scientists to believe dreaming is an evolutionary survival mechanism designed to keep our brains alert. Dawson said it might prevent you getting so deeply asleep that you would be vulnerable if you needed to wake up quickly.
I love this. I have heard this argument before and I love it. And, you know, we're going to move into the land of conjecture, because who knows? Yeah, of course he is correct. You know, the brainwave patterns that you have while you're actually dreaming, you know, in REM sleep, in rapid eye movement sleep, are very, very similar to being awake. You know, you go to bed, and usually it doesn't really quite work like this, but usually there's about an hour and a half where you drop down into very deep levels of, deeper and deeper levels of healing sleep where you don't dream. And that's where your body and mind are actually doing a lot of deep healing. And then after about an hour and a half, you come up into the REM phase, the official dreaming phase. I say official because some people dream straight away when they fall asleep. But you come up.
Jane, if I have a nap, I can dream in 5-6 minutes.
Yeah, and so can most people. So it's really quite contradictory, scientific stuff. But in theory, and you know, and in major part, we get into this really REM, rapid eye movement dream phase after about an hour and a half. We have our dream, and that's when our brainwave activity is really quite active. And when we finish that dream, if we don't wake up, you know, the brainwave is quite active. If you're going to wake up at all during the night, you usually wake up at the end of a dream because you are a little bit awake. You know, you've got your brainwaves are close to the waking pattern. He is right there. But if you don't wake up, if nothing disturbs you, including the dream, you drop back down, you go back into those, you know, 3 or 4 stages of deep sleep again, which are all slightly different from each other, different phases of sleep. And then you come up for another dreaming period. And that's why in an 8-hour sleep, you normally have 4 or 5 different dreams going around these sleep cycles. And for each dream, as he correctly says, your brainwave pattern is very similar to being awake. That's why if it's a really hot or cold night or something, you often think you've dreamt more, because you tend to wake up more at the end of your dreams. If you're going to wake up, it's at the end of your dreams and you think you've had more dreams. Nobody wakes up in deep sleep. You know, everybody listening, how many times have you tried to wake someone up in deep sleep, and just how hard is it? They can't. And that's where I find this theory about the evolution quite interesting. Let's just look at this. This theory is that because we are quite wakeful when we have a dream, this theory says that while we're asleep, we occasionally surface 4 or 5 times to have a dream just so that we can be awake enough to wake up if there's a dangerous animal lurking about.
Or somebody's pinching your wife and dragging her off by the hair with a club.
So what happens during the other 4/5 of the night when you're in deep sleep?
Well, you get
totally
eaten by
unwakeable?
A dinosaur, don't
yeah.
you?
Yeah, so where's the evolutionary benefit? It only works 20% of the time.
Less.
And the only other thing I could think of was maybe if everyone went to sleep at different times, you know, 20% of the caveman population would be in dream phase and slightly awake when the rest of the population were asleep. Or maybe they actually had kind of, you know,
shifts
because of that.
But the sleep cycles are fairly regular, aren't they, throughout all mankind? It's just,
they are
90 minutes cycles. Mm-hmm. 5 or 6 a night.
And, not only that, but, if we're talking about evolution, we're going back, many, many, many generations here to caveman kind of time. And, there was no sort of sitting up late watching the television or listening to a podcast or playing on the internet. When it got dark, there wasn't really much to do.
Let's go into that.
Well, you go to bed.
Well,
you go to sleep. You see? So everybody's basically sleeping at the same time and probably dreaming at the same time. So the wild animals, if they wanted a really good feast, there's kind of 80% of the night when they would evolve to know when to come in and have a good nibble. Anyway, that's all conjecture. And I think it's really interesting that that last question was about, we started to talk about evolution and animals and survival and cavemen, because it really quite nicely segs into Jeremy's question about dreaming animals. So, Michael, I'll thank you very much for participating today and send you back to your quiet corner.
Well, I don't know, Jen. I'm actually getting to like this. Can I hang? Okay, I'll go. Goodbye, everybody. I'll leave you with Jane.
Yeah, and for those of you that are interested, when I write the little blog to go with this, I'll give you a link to Michael's ghostwriting blog so that you can have a look at a picture of him and have a look at what he's got to say when he's not sitting quietly and ghostly in his corner. Thanks, Michael. That was great. Jeremy. Jeremy emailed me and asked this question. He said, and I'm reading from his email here, when animals appear in our dreams, what kind of information can we gain? For example, there's often a rabbit or a cat in my dream, he said. And he did go on in the email to say, I think you have talked about animals on these podcasts before, but I want a bit more information. So I looked through you're correct, Jeremy. I covered quite a bit on the significance of animals in our dreams in episode 25, when I explored an article I wrote a long time ago called Dreamvolution, which is like, there's that evolution word again. Anyway, synchronicities aside, and I'm going to say, number one, go back and listen to episode 25, but I have got some new things here. And then I'm going to also take a little interesting exercise out of the middle of that episode 25 to add in. So Jeremy's question, when animals appear in our dreams, what kind of information can we gain? For example, there's often a rabbit or a cat in my dream. I'm going to start by reading tip 25 from my book, 101 Dream Interpretation Tips. And this tip is about animal dreams. So here we go. Tip 25, animal dreams. Snakes, whales, jaguars, dogs, cats, rats, exotic or mundane, wild or domestic, animals not only populate our dreams, but often take leading roles, sometimes speaking roles, chatting away as if they were human. Usually, though, they communicate in the way animals do. A defensive roar here, an impatient swish of a tail there, a sly slither or wriggle, a cunning fox trot, a sting in the tail, offering a feather for a nest, an exposed tummy for a tickle, or an elaborate courting ritual. And what do all these animal communications have in common? Their survival instincts aimed at securing food, shelter, territory, mating, offspring, and safety. And that is the tip, the key to why you dream of awesome, even magical animals at certain times in your life. These dreams come up when your basic survival feels threatened. Now, the cause may be obvious. You may have just lost a job, income, partner, or home, and you may be wondering how you are going to survive physically, mentally, emotionally, or spiritually. Or the cause may be more subtle, you know, perhaps a feeling that you're losing hard-won territory in a working relationship, or feeling insecure about making a big change in your life. When an animal appears in your dream, ask, where in your life are you feeling the pressures of survival or adaptation to change? Sometimes you need to tune into your animal instincts to get through hard times. You know, you might need to get in touch with your animal intuition, be guided by your gut feelings, start building a new nest, a home, or work with a pack, team or family, to ensure your needs are met. Sometimes, though, your natural animal instincts might be working against you as you snarl and growl to defend your patch, your work, mate, or space, instead of negotiating a friendly win-win outcome. So look at the animal in your dream. What do you see as its survival instincts? Which of these instincts could work for you and which against you? What can you learn about yourself and your situation from this awesome animal energy in your dream? That's the end of the tip, and it just occurred to me reading that. I mean, I wrote these tips to be short and sweet, so I'm just going to add a little bit more. And we do have an audio book of this book, actually. I have read these all out on audiobook, which you can get from my shop if you're interested. But it just occurred to me that I'm talking about natural instincts of animals. And we also, particularly in our early childhood, learn instincts. We learn ways of doing things from our parents. We learn survival instincts that maybe aren't inborn, but learned from our parents. And they can come up represented as animals in our dreams, too. So, Jeremy, I am going to add a little bit more help here, but you particularly said that there's often a rabbit or a cat in your dream. So I'd say, remember when you have a dream that it always reflects the last 24 to 48 hours. So ask yourself, Jeremy, you know, what do you see as the survival instincts of a rabbit or the survival instincts of a cat? And also ask yourself, what do you see as the personality of a rabbit and the personality of a cat? And then ask yourself, why, you know, how does that inform you about your experiences of the last 2 days? Where in your life are you looking at survival instincts? And my guess is that, Jeremy, you're probably looking making some changes in your life, you know, stepping outside a comfort zone. And whenever we do that, oh, quick snap, the animal instinct comes in. I'm in a new space. Quick, survival instincts. So have a little look at what rabbit and cat might signify for you, Jeremy, and you'll learn a little bit about, you know, your natural instincts. You may find that there's rabbit and cat tendencies that are tending to snap in for you when you're feeling that your survival is under threat. And you may decide that they're working for you, or you may decide that they're working against you. Awareness is a powerful tool. But of course, you can do more. You can do dream alchemy. So I'm jumping right in here to a bit that I covered in the middle of episode 25, and it's a dialogue exercise that you can do with animals that turn up in your dreams. So what you do is, if you're going through a period of change and you find that you notice that you're dreaming a lot about animals, just write down the animals on a piece of paper, and while you're awake, set them to talk to each other. Now, this is the example. I've got here a lion, a sheep, a bird, a worm, and a kangaroo. And you write the animals down on a piece of paper, or on your computer keyboard, you have them up on your screen. And without thinking, you give yourself 10 minutes, no more, and you quickly make them all talk to each other. You give them about a sentence each, and you get your animals talking to each other without thinking about it yourself. So it's really your gut instinct or your unconscious voice that's having fun. This is a lot of fun doing these dialogue exercises, having fun getting the animals to speak to each other. Now, I'll just give you an example of how that's done, and then I'll really hammer it home so you understand what I'm talking about. So this is the example I gave in episode 25. Lion, quiet confidence wears away your enemies and conserves your energy. Don't waste so much time wondering if you're good enough. Embrace the change. Sheep, stick with the crowd. Don't try to lead. You'll only end up with more responsibilities. Bird, come up here and see the view from above. Sometimes a change of perspective helps. Get a bit more distance from this. Worm, you don't often see me, I know, because I like to bury deep and hide. But I must say, I quite like the sunshine out here. Oh no, I'm drying up, burning, help, I'm dying. Bird, ah, worm, yum. You see, from my perspective, this little worm's been doing you no good burrowing away inside, eating you up from the inside out. Death to old worms. Long live the power of perspective. Kangaroo, anyone tried this? Jump, spring, leap. I found this new way of getting around. Think it'll catch on? Hey, you should see this cool new way I found to carry babies around too. Think there's a market in this? So that's an example of a dialogue. You'll find when you do it, it kind of doesn't work for the first few sentences, and then you suddenly get in the flow, and it'll actually come out not only as quite funny, but quite informative. And what you're really doing there is it's your unconscious mind is expressing itself about the animals in your dreams and helping you to understand what they represent about yourself. And when you set those dream animals to talk to each other, that's where you begin to get some evolution happening. What you're really doing is getting your natural instincts to, rather than being in conflict with each other, to start to talk to each other and find win-win solutions. I probably expressed that a bit better when I wrote about it, so I'll read out this next bit just to round it off. So you get the picture. Whenever you do this kind of dream alchemy practice, things evolve. In this example, the dream animals express their individual survival instincts, and from this sharing, a new picture of your inner world emerges. In this example, you become aware of the conflicts, for example, whether to lead or follow, and you discover why, for example, issues of responsibility and being good enough. In this example, you identify the worm, the stress deep down inside, and you put an end to it by getting clearer perspective, seeing things in proportion rather than letting small things gnaw away at you. In this example, you also see the beginnings of adaptation to change, with your kangaroo instincts finding new ways to do things. So let your dream animals, Jeremy, reveal your survival instincts during times of change, and let dream alchemy help you to discover the magic of transformation as you identify the issues behind your conflicting instincts and find new ways forward. So, well, I didn't know that all that was actually going to fit so beautifully together. At least I think it did from my bird's perspective up here in the sky looking down. And if you're still listening, I guess you found it informative too. Otherwise, you kind of adapted to change and switched off and went somewhere else in the meantime. We like to ring the changes, and we are having a guest on the show again next week with a dream. So you can look forward to that in episode 66. And if you'd like to be a guest on the show, please put up your hand, because you may feel a little bit like, oh, I'm coming on the show and I'm going to maybe feel a bit vulnerable here. But it's a wonderful gift that you offer in helping other people to understand the interpretation and alchemy process. So if you're up for that, and of course it does save you some money because you don't have to come and have a private reading with me. It will be a generous and lovely thing to do. So I hope that you've enjoyed today's show, and thank you for staying with us. And it was lovely for me to introduce Michael to you, and I hope that you enjoyed meeting him as well. You know, it took 65 episodes to get him behind the microphone, but it worked in the end. And of course, if you'd like more information, either lots more free resources or how to contact me for a consultation by phone or by Skype or by email, please go to my website at www.dream.net.au or to my blog at janetereza.com, or join me on Facebook or on Twitter And please, if you love this show, please share it with your friends. And quite a few people, I was surprised that quite a few people who I was casually chatting to, who listened to this show, you know, through Facebook and things that I was chatting to, have said that they didn't realize that they could download it all on iTunes. So if you don't know about iTunes, go there, because you can make life so much easier for yourself. And if you don't know how to do it, ask someone and they'll help you. Or ask Michael, he'll help you. I'll see you next week for episode 66. Have a wonderful week, sweet dreams, and see you then. I'm Jane Teresa Anderson.
If you've had a dream you'd like interpreted on this program, send your email to thedreamshow@lifestylepodnetwork.com. You can also follow Jane on Twitter at twitter.com/dreamsite. The Dream Show is a production of Dreamsite Corporation for the Lifestyle Pod Network. You can find more great podcasts like this one at lifestylepodnetwork.com.